Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Eric Wheaton, 18 years of career experience, second generation firefighter who really never had notions of becoming a firefighter himself. When you're a generation or legacy child, sometimes you're constantly being compared to your mother or father's achievements and may struggle to establish your own identity. Eric was fully transparent when he openly discussed the allure of getting into this field. Once he did every skill, challenge, or test, Eric made sure he was always at the top, leaving no room for assumptions he didn't earn his keep. A dream doesn't become reality through magic. It takes sweat, determination, and hard work. Eric Wheaton is proof of that. With that, I present Mr. Eric Wheaton.
Yeah, my name's Eric Wheaton. I'm a second generation firefighter for the city of Winter Park in Central Florida. We're basically city of Orlando's northern border there. Like I mentioned, I'm second generation. My father did 31 years for the city of Winter Park. So I got on the same job as my dad. Got to work about 10 years with him before he retired in 2016. So obviously that's how I got my start with the fire service. I do like to mention though, I did not have like that fairy tale father son upbringing in the fire service. Whereas, a lot of guys that, that had family in the fire service, they kind of knew at birth that's what they wanted to do, or that seems to be the common fairy tale story. That was not my upbringing at all. My father was a lot like his father, who was a Navy veteran in World War II, actually landed during D-Day, and so had incredible stories of war and just, the things that you can imagine in that greatest generational era. And my grandpa, my dad's dad wouldn't talk about war, wouldn't talk about the military or the Navy specifically to my father growing up. And I feel like that's how my dad was with me in the fire service. He worked in, he got hired in the early 80s when, a lot of cities were going to a fair amount of fire, going to a fair amount of emergencies, a lot of trauma. And he didn't bring that home to me as a little kid. So I really didn't have any interest in it at all. I had no real desire to do it. That coupled with, kind of the city I grew up in, and I guess the generation I grew up in, whereas to be successful in life, you had to go to college, you had to get a formal education. And I kind of was more counterculture to that. Like I didn't want to do any of that. And, so basically what I ended up doing is completely getting turned off from academia entirely, all through middle school, high school. And ultimately, my decision not to even go to college was based off how I was forced by the adults and teachers to go to school and know that. And I didn't want any interest in that. I mean, I had zero interest in going to college. I had zero interest in being a fireman. And I got really into surfing and traveling surfing. And me and my best friend, we would travel all over the place and surf. And I'm on the surf trip with my dad and a couple guys from the fire department. And they came up to me. I just was fresh out of high school. So 18 years old, 19 years old. And they're like, "Hey, Eric, what are you going to do with your life?" And I'm like, "Here we go. These guys are going to give me a hard time that I'm just basically, surfing my life away." And I said, "I don't know this." And I'm looking out of this beautiful beach in the Bahamas, just came in from surfing. And I'm like, "This seems like a pretty good plan." And they're like, "Hey, you can do this and still have a career." And, my dad was, down the beach or something, hanging out with my mom, like was nowhere in this conversation. And it was at that moment in time that I realized, I'm like, damn, I could get a career, be socially accepted, make some money, and still surf. So I literally got into the fire service because of the schedule. I was one of those guys that got in because I wanted the 2 days off to surf. And obviously, fast forward today, the obviously the priority of how I think of the job is completely 180'd now. And in fact, I would it's kind of embarrassing to even admit that I got into the job that way, but that's the truth. And of course, my dad was extremely proud of me, and it was tough to get on with Warner Park because they had a nepotism law. I was actually the first family they hired in over 30 years. But they took a chance on me, and it's worked out wonderful since. But yeah, it's kind of a roundabout way of how I got into the fire service.
Okay. Now I do have a question for you, because I kind of talked with this I talked about this topic with oh my God, wow, with Bobby Eckert. And so with your father being a firefighter there, and I'm assuming he had a reputation, and by that I mean a very good reputation. Did you feel any sort of pressure trying to follow that legacy?
I did. I felt pressure for sure. I felt pressure to perform. I can't really say if I would say I was I felt the pressure because I wanted to live up to his reputation. And I think maybe that's what you're digging for. I felt pressure because I was the first family member that they had hired, and I think others were looking for me to fail. They were basically, oh, well, you just got hired because of your dad. I felt pressure like that to outperform my ability or others around me. So they could look at me and be like, no, that Wheaton kid, man, he's killing it. He's crushing it. He's thriving in this job. He's thriving in this department. It has nothing to do with his dad being here. And I remember my dad did an incredible job prepping me for this job as much as he could. And one of those things is, when I was testing is, hey, give them a reason. Basically, don't give them a reason to skip you up on this process. Don't get last on the list, and then they hire you, and then obviously people could say, oh, well, you just got it because of your dad. So I did my damnedest to get number one on the hiring list, and I studied my butt off. I studied so hard. I put a lot of time and effort into it, and ultimately, was towards the top of the list, and got picked up. And that mindset carried on through my entire career, and even to the day when I'm going through promotional exams or trying to stay at a high level of my job is I don't want anybody that knew my dad to be like, he's just here because of his dad. He just got promoted because of his dad. And my dad had a great reputation as being a great engineer. He retired as a driver, as an engineer on an engine company. Funny story is he's a diehard engine guy, and if you know me, I'm the complete opposite as far as apparatus selection there. So that was his thing. That generation had some culture issues and things like that. So he definitely wasn't known as like the nicest guy around the fire department, especially for newer firefighters. But he was just acting as he was basically cultured into that job. Yeah, I definitely, to circle back to your question, I definitely did feel pressure. But again, I think it was just pressure to make sure to prove to people that I deserve to be there, with my mindset, my hard work and dedication and work ethic, things like that.
Okay. All right. Awesome. And for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us about Winter Park, the size, how many personnel, stations, things of that nature?
So the fire department, it's an old city. The city was founded in, at least for my area of terms, relative, is a fairly old city. The city was founded in like 1882 or 3, and the fire department got formed in 1900. We're a 9 square mile city, so we're a very small city. We have three firehouses within that 9 square miles. Three engine companies, one truck company, one battalion, EMS captain, who's basically our safety officer, or could be plugged in as a like downrange chief. So we have our administration is made up of, as far as the fire side of things, not civilian. I have three division chiefs and a fire chief. And yeah, so That's basically our size and how long we've been established. I guess for minimum staffing, our engine companies in this, we're civil service code, and it's written in civil service code, so we do not fall below minimum staffing ever or take units out of service. Is three on an engine company and four on the truck. Oh, and then the other companies I didn't mention were our ambulances. We call them rescues in Florida. We have two of those. We're in the process of staffing, full-time staffing a third one right now. And for anyone outside of Florida, we call them rescues. They're ambulances with firefighters on them. They carry some fire gear. And it's a fire, very, very traditional fire-based EMS system. Pretty much the whole state. It runs that way. Love it or hate it, that I think for a civilian, I obviously live in Florida. I appreciate the fact that I live in an area that's fire-based EMS because the response times are much greater. You usually have a little more professional carrying with a fire department running those systems rather than, you're kind of Joe Blow, not to, pick on those people, but just generality here, I feel like there's a professionalism that's held a little higher standard in the fire service than the EMS service. And let's face it, and we had an incident just last month where we could pull you out of fire and immediately do ALS treatment to you immediately with our bunker gear still breathing air. We can start treating you. And I think there is a great benefit to a lot of that to provide the citizens. I'm not a big EMS guy, but I do know it's got a good place, at least in our system and how Florida runs.
No, I definitely understand that. I 100% agree with your statement. Unfortunately, we all know if let's just say, for instance, if you're in an organization where the county provides you the EMS service or a hospital type base, you have some good people that you'd want working on you, and then you have those that you would not want showing up. So I 100% understand that. As far as if, I'm assuming if a first due structural box comes in within the jurisdiction of Winter Park, you're getting all three stations.
We basically dump the whole city, minus one of those rescue trucks as soon as it goes to a working fire response. And that could be that's called by the on-duty battalion. So basically, we either get reports from dispatch that we have multiple calls or more of a credible source like PD's on scene reporting this, or when we get our first company on scene and they report a working fire, we're going to add an additional ambulance, which would be basically tap out our city, and then an additional engine company, which is going to come from a an automatic aid department around us, and that's going to be City of Orlando, Orange County, City of Maitland, or Seminole County. We're basically kind of surrounded by those departments, and then and if anything goes, if I have to request more resources, that's obviously all going to come from automatic aid units, and I have endless supply of rigs to call into the city, endless supply. I mean, I'm in Orange County, which is the third largest fire department in the state. So them alone could provide a crazy amount of resources for our city.
Okay. All right. And one last question I have. I am kind of a fire buff, so I follow a lot of fire buff photography, videography type pages. I don't know if it's changed or if it was an incorrect statement toward the post, but if you get a call, do all your units roll hot or is it only the primary unit?
For what type of call? Anything?
Yeah, sure, anything.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we run hot on everything. The only thing that you'll see us kind of respond to non-emergency calls would be our elevator calls, our lift assist calls, the our fire alarms. We send that might have been what you were speaking of
Yes, I think
because
so.
specifically to our fire department. Yeah, so what it is we dump a decent amount of resources on even a fire alarm. And basically what it is our first due company is going to run emergency to that. And then everybody else is going to come non-emergency. And everybody else is, or basically our system is we send two engines, a truck and a battalion to every fire alarm in the city. And so if it's In the if it's in the districts with the engine companies where there's no truck there, those engines run emergency to their first due, and everybody else comes and not. If it's in our first due at 61, our truck would go emergency to the fire alarm, and then the two engines and the chief will be falling behind non-emergency.
Okay. All right.
And the firehouse at 61 is our main station. That's a dual house as well. Just know that. So there's a truck and an engine, one of our ambulances, and the chief and the captain are all. It's a firehouse of a minimum staffed of 11 people, 13 assigned, but 11 day to day.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna kind of fast forward. So you took the advice of your father's coworkers at the time, and you're like, shoot, light bulb clicked on. All right, let me try this. Upon completion and being selected to get on Winter Park, what was that feeling like for you?
Yeah, it was well, obviously it was incredible feeling because I scored a career and I was very young. I was just I mean just turned 21. Again, I wasn't I got into it because of the time off, right? And then I'm 21, I got a career. The pay relative to what I was doing, just side jobs here and there, the pay was incredible. And I had my time off. And backing up a little bit though, before I got hired, when I was going through fire school in the state of Florida, you have to go to a college to get certified, firefighter 1 and 2 and EMT. Then you go apply to a fire department. They don't hire you off the street. There now that there's recruiting issues around, some of the major departments are starting to hire you off the street, but that's kind of a new system. So when I was going through fire school, I had these incredible instructors through standards, minimum standards. It was incredible. I mean, JJ Cassetta, Matt and Steve Negley, these are guys that teach at FDIC. They travel the country. Mike Aiken, these guys, and they all worked for Orlando. And they left a impression on me, which actually was my first taste into wanting to become an instructor. Even before I was a certified firefighter, it piqued my interest to come back and give back to the department. So that was the first time I was like, there might be something more to this job than just the time off. And I got on with Winter Park, and Winter Park is has an extremely positive reputation, not only just in our area, but the country. And part of that is due to the gentleman who started Venner Search, the website, and now the training company was Jim Walsh, and he was our training captain. So I get through standards. I kind of had a little taste that, man, there might be something to this job. And I get on and I walk through the door. I'm proud. I worked hard. I'm with at my dad's job. I know more than half the guys that I was working with, I've known since birth. And so I'm feeling comfortable. And man, I'm smacked in the face with my first real mentor outside of my father being Jim Walsh. And he is newly promoted to that training position and just balls to the wall, gung ho, wanting to you really develop our fire department into a training culture fire department. And yeah, so it was quickly within the first year, man, I was like, this is me, this is what I want to do. I'm so proud that I decided to do this career. And it was just fun, man. I was having a great time and learned a lot that first year.
Okay. And what I like about what you said was the fact that, you found that mentor in a sense to kind of guide you. For our listeners, how important is it, especially when you're coming into an organization where you're new and you really don't know anybody, how important is it to find the individual or individuals you want to emulate?
Yeah, that's a good point. Good question there. It is in my opinion, the most profound thing that can happen to a new firefighter is coming in and having somebody with that has respect, reputation, and willingness to mentor and work hard, and to guide you into the appropriate way to act, how to work, job knowledge, pass their experience on to you. You can't put a price tag on that. And honestly, that is a huge culture builder for the fire department. Because imagine if you had a fire department full of mentors, and every new class comes in that gets hired, and everybody respects these guys and they take them under the wing. You know what? This kid, he's whatever generation, doesn't know how to clean a toilet, doesn't know how to change a saw blade. Instead of sitting on the recliner laughing at this kid, you take them under your wing and mentor them up and show them the way. I didn't know how to clean the toilet when I got hired. I took the scrub brush that was supposed to go inside the bowl. I cleaned the inside of the bowl and then I scrubbed the outside of the bowl with it too. Until one of the older guys that we got hired with walked in the bathroom, helped me clean, and he was like, "Hey, Wheaton, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I've never had to clean a toilet bowl in my life. Like, I didn't know, you know." And he showed me how to do it. And
Right.
that might sound silly, but you know, I didn't have that upbringing. I didn't clean the toilets. I didn't know. And that's just one example. But it is very profound, priceless to have mentors in there, and it really can make or break your culture. Unfortunately, a lot of smaller departments, a lot of departments outside the big urban departments, they don't really value the senior man. And when I say senior man, that is not somebody with the most amount of time on the job per se. Lots of times it is, but it's the one who puts the time in to coach and mentor and pass on knowledge to the next generation of those firefighters in that agency.
Love it. Okay. With that being said, at what point in your career did you decide, hey, I want to go to the next step? And I'm not sure what your steps are in Winter Park, but when did you decide, like, I'm ready to move up?
As far as like promotion, like
Yes,
the
yes.
next, okay. Well, I mean, really, I started testing early on. And it just in my fire department, we have really good retention. Like, I mean, bananas retention. Like, I'm talking about we haven't lost somebody to another fire department coming up to 20 years. So what that creates though is when promotions come up, everybody has the attitude of take every test you can. You know, some people will kind of dog you that you're taking a test early, but then the majority of people are like, hey, take every test you can, get the experience, and if you get promoted, that's good because you don't know when it's going to come again.
Right.
And I think I was on the job for about 5 years before my first promotion came up. We have engineer positions is a promoted position. However, because we're a small fire department, we can go from firefighter straight to lieutenant, which is our company officer role. The first promotion that came up was a lieutenant. And at, you know, 4 or 5 years on, I started attending conferences. I started, getting some job knowledge. Basically, I ate humble pie. I showed up that test really full of myself, really thought I actually was going to get promoted. I was like, I put the work in. I've done everything outside of here to take courses and classes and start to get mentors outside my job. And I took the test. I had no idea how to test. I didn't even know you studied for an interview. I had no clue. So I didn't even study for the interview. I bombed the interview. Tactics, I did decent because I was into the job. I was a buff. That was probably the easiest part for me. Written test, that was a little touch or go because again, kind of my study habits from when I was a kid bled over into my early years of the fire service. And so that 4 or 5 year mark is when I took my first test, and I didn't get in close to getting promoted. It wasn't until I had 8 years on, so 3 years later, I stopped taking the lieutenant's test because I realized I'm like, what am I? I'm not ready for this. I don't care how long it's going to take for the next test. I don't need to be a lieutenant right now. And then so I started testing for driver, and at the 8 year mark, I got or sorry, it was 9 years, just before my tenure, I believe. I got an engineer position, which a little cool fact about that, it was actually my dad's position. So when he left, he created an engineer spot. I took that test and got that spot. And that was in 2016, it would have been. So if my math is right on my years, is when I got made engineer. But like I said, 4 or 5 year mark is when I was trying to take that those tests.
Okay. All right. And so, you mentioned that you started studying, you were hungry into the job, going to outside training, things of that nature. What pushed you towards the truck company side? Like, what about the truck company was intriguing for you?
Yeah, no, good, another good one there. So obviously, growing up, talking to my dad, prepping me up for the job, he was engine. He would actually even, kind of poke fun at the truck. At the time, I thought he was being serious, but he's just joking with him. But I was like, oh, I don't really want this, do this truck stuff. And I get on the job, and at the truck company at the time, there was a really good lieutenant on there, that even my engine lieutenant was amazing too my first year. But the truck lieutenant, he's a battalion now, he's on the last couple of years of his career, but he was a fun person to work for. I was at 61, and I was at the dual house there, so I got to see those guys and operate. And really, the truck, when they arrived to fire, they got to do truck work. They got to do no matter what. Whereas when you're on an engine in a three engine department, depending on what engine I arrived on, was basically in my eyes is how much fun I was going to have, right? Am I second due sitting at a hydrant? Am I first due on the nozzle? Am I going third due where I'm pulling secondary line when the fire's already kind of knocked back, or hell, if I got assigned writs or something like that? I was like, well, when the truck shows up, they're doing the search, forcible entry if it's not done, ventilation, like their tasks aren't really changing off the order of arrival there. And for us being an only truck in the city, that's also our special service unit. So it's also carries all the special operations equipment. And that first year, after that first year of my probie year, I started taking all my special operations classes, because to get on the truck, you have to have those certifications. And so I had a lieutenant on there that I really wanted to work for. I wanted to do that work where no matter when I arrived, I was going to get to do that work. They went to all the good calls. They did all the special ops stuff, and so that appealed to me. It wasn't until I got physically assigned to the truck, which was basically after my first year, I got assigned to it, and have been on it ever since until my recent promotion. But the mindset is what ultimately really kept me engaged in that vehicle, because of the mindset of a four person, very traditional, two inside, two outside type of breaking up your team. It really appealed to me, especially when I was outside truck, because I worked indirectly supervised by the lieutenant. And basically what that created was me as a young firefighter be able to look at a building, given the situation, and make my own decisions. So where to ventilate, where to enter, where to VES, where to force a door, where to throw a ladder. And I didn't have an officer, basically pushing me on my back, telling me exactly what to do. And there was a lot of exponential growth when I would ride that outside function that really appealed to me.
Okay. If I can ask, does it kind of sounds like Winter Park does what I call PDAs, predetermined assignments?
Oh yeah. Yes.
I mentioned the PDAs because I like what I like about it is, everybody knows their role, and instead of waiting for an assignment, everybody knows what they're supposed to do. And it's just my opinion that when you can flood the scene and everybody knows what their objective is, to me it makes the scene quote unquote safer. Whereas, everybody's going to work to the common goal is to extinguish the fire, start a search, the things that we're supposed to do. When it comes to truck work, though, and developing that culture, how would somebody go about doing that? Because there are organizations out there that may have a really good engine company culture, but their truck culture is lacking, and vice versa. So how would somebody go about doing that?
Like build the truck culture.
Yes.
Well, first things first is that you don't have to be assigned to a ladder truck and have a truck culture, or have you can work for a fire department that doesn't even have a ladder truck. What I say with the system, where it's basically we call it an SOG driven system. What did you mention it as?
PDAs, predetermined assignments.
Okay, PDAs or PDAs, or is it what we call it, SOG driven, or more like ICS driven,
Okay.
which is, basically the chief does a lot of assigning of tasks. Well, even in that ICS system, y y you guys are probably doing the same things over and over again. Like if it's the first due engine company, I don't need the chief to tell me as if I'm the company officer on first due engine, I don't need to wait for for a battalion chief to tell me to pull a line. I know that job's there. If I'm second due, at least in my area, a lot of second due units or that medic unit, that first arrived medic unit will be assigned search. And if that's your system that you're doing it, just write it down and have it in policy, because that does two things for accountability. It's accountability because if a job doesn't get done, I know for my case, hey, if the opposite the hose line did that door did not get forced, I know I can pinpoint the exact person to go to on my companies. Hey, why didn't that door get forced? Well, I ran to the Charlie side and there's bars on the window, so I decided that was a high priority and I took the bars. That didn't get done. Or if an emergency happens and we're calling people out of the building or Mayday goes out, accountability is in where people should be functioning on that fire ground. So I know, hey, inside truck, they're going to go to the fire room first to start their search and isolate that room if possible, because we search in front of the hose line. So I know generally they should have been from their entry point to the fire. Somewhere in between there, they should be there. So there's kind of two points of accountability. But to go back to answer your question, how do you start that culture? Is just like any culture change, it's going to start with one person. Just remember, just because you don't have a nice bendy truck or a big tower ladder, and you're on an engine company or you're in Florida, you're on a medic unit, it starts with you, and it starts with looking at yourself in the mirror. Be like, hey, I really want to start an aggressive truck company. Well, you need to go get it, seek that knowledge and those skills. So go out and train, go to conferences, talk to people, start training and out back of the firehouse. If you have a door prop, or obviously, you should have some ground ladders. You can throw some portable ladders out back, and then someone's going to come out and they're going to ask you, "Whoa, what are you doing?" It's like, "Oh, we do a lot of training on engine work, and I just feel like our truck culture is kind of lacking. I want to kind of get better at that." That function. So when we're assigned a search or to ladder a building, I'm more competent in my skills. And then just like any culture change, one turns to two, turns to five, turns to six, as far as people joining you. And it takes time. That's what I would do. I'm just worried about myself. I would not get discouraged if you don't have the physical building there, and then try to get your decision makers involved with that. For my agency, getting promoted, it does help. I mean, you definitely get a lot more fingers in the fire the higher up you go. Able to not necessarily force more change, but probably it just becomes a little easier, right? But yeah, it's a tough question. The culture changing is definitely a tough question, but I always just go back to just, hey, look in the mirror, worry about yourself, and then you'll build some reputation. Reputation will foster followers, and followers, will come join you.
Okay. I like, all right. I had to ask, and I like it. I like it. you mentioned, one of your topics, cultural changes in your department that, you've gone through, training being a foundation of change. I'm sure if we could understand it, we the ones who think about this would be millionaires and very famous. But the individuals that see training as a burden, knowing that when coming into the job as a firefighter, training and firefighting go hand in hand. What's your take on that?
Again, if I had to answer these culture questions and stuff like that, I'd definitely be a millionaire. But I'll back up a bit and tell you a little bit of the history of our fire department, my path through the culture change in my fire department, and then it might set you up for some answers to that. And basically, when I got hired, I mentioned earlier that we have a strong retention rate. It's been about 20 years since we lost somebody to another fire department. I mean, you guys have obviously retired or gone to do other careers and things like that, but it's been about 20 years. And what that's created is huge generational gaps. And I talk about this a lot publicly. And so if you think about it, when I got hired in the early to mid 2000s, I was working with guys that got hired on in the 70s and 80s, right? So that culture is completely different than a millennial coming in at 21, 20 years old. And basically, that at that those times, that generation of guys went through some pretty crappy financial times, relationships with the city and the union. And so I chop it up as they're pretty jaded at the job. Not, and this is broad. There's obviously pockets of guys that love the job and were mentors of mine, obviously, but a good chunk of them, they were pretty jaded about the job. So here comes young Wheaton here, who quickly got really into the job, is out there working out in gear, throwing ladders and gear out back. And I did not get a lot of guys appreciate that, but there were some guys, a very vocal few, that would tear me down pretty good. I mean, I would be reading a fire engineering magazine, firehouse magazine, on the back seat of the engine, one, in the bay on a Sunday, and they'd walk by and I'd have to hide it, because they would just sit there and, destroy me. How many times people have told me, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? And so what I did is I just worried about myself. I found one or two people that I enjoyed being around. They were, they weren't beating me up for trying to be better at the job. And then slowly over time, that one person would come out and join me, then a second person would come out and join me. And then couple that with, now we have this newer training captain, Jim Walsh, who's very into the job, very into training, and he's training us. We're running drills. And basically our whole shift of our fire department starts happening over the 10, 15, 20 years this past 10, 15, 20 years. And now we're hiring people that they come to our fire department for the culture that we have now. And I remind them all the time, I'm like, you guys are lucky. I had to, battle through this. There's a handful of us that had to battle through this and stay thick-skinned and hard-headed with our ways. And now it's people come to our fire department because that's what they want. We hire mostly people from other agencies, and it's not that we purposely go look for those people. That's just who's applying to the job, because culture is such a big thing, especially in this newer generation, is, they want their time off and they want a happy place to work and a positive culture to work. And so people will come to us for that. And now that's what we foster. So if you come to us wanting that culture, you're gonna fill right into that culture. We don't have like hardly anybody or nobody really with poor attitudes about that stuff. I mean, and at the end of the day, guys, the big answer is sometimes these people just have to retire out. Unfortunately, you're just gonna have to deal with it until you retire out. That's a lot of what happened with us. You either joined, or you just kind of complained and sat by yourself while our numbers of positivity and training culture were just growing and growing and growing. And you either just give in to that, or you just retire out and we're just gonna have more positive people. And the fire department now at work is just incredible. Incredible. And we talk about it all the time amongst ourselves, how lucky we are and how blessed we are to work at an agency that fosters that culture. So
You mentioned Jim Walsh was a very big influential person. So the Van Enter search thing, how did he kind of like show you the way, or did you kind of embrace that and wanted to learn more about that?
Well, I think I was probably a little more pushy to him, like, hey, let me help you out. Like, I want to be involved with this, even if it's like running the web page on the back end. I knew nothing about web design or anything, but it was just, I saw training as a very therapeutic thing for me. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I enjoyed being physical, doing hard things. And he had basically the doorway to the fire service that I know today. I mean, I was just so lucky that he worked for my fire department. And I pushed him and pushed him and pushed him, and finally, yes, he let me come hang with him at the coffee shops, monthly, and do blog posts, and then he started going out and doing lectures just naturally. It wasn't the start of the website had nothing to do with teaching. It was all, or at least like physically going out and teaching. It was teaching things, because you'd read a blog that was something that you would learn, but it naturally went into lectures, and he traveled a few states to do a lecture. And I said, hey, we should do hands-on. We should do hands-on. And he was a little reluctant to pull the trigger because insurance and stuff, that is something that you really have to carry when you have these training companies that do hands-on things, and it's not cheap. And so he was a little nervous about that. And basically, at around 2017 or in 2017, he was teed up to be our next fire chief, and that was his main goal. And he couldn't have, a website that or a blog website. And at that time, it was already kind of really steamrolling into a training company with a firefighter, right? So he gave me the company. I took it over in 2017, and a week later, to that meeting, he actually had a hemorrhagic stroke on duty. And where he had to retire out medically. And so, just a little history. A lot of people think I took it over because of his injury, but it was actually already in the works at that time. And then again, just because I told you my main goal was, or vision was, a training, hands-on training company, because that's what I was into. I was into hands-on training. And then that's how that kind of steamrolled into what I have today as far as being a business owner of that. But yeah, it started me pushing them. Like, hey, let me in, let me in, let me into your world. I want to see the back end of this. And then he'd let me in, and then it kind of steamrolled into a full-blown training company.
Okay. All right. And I like the fact that you put it out there. That's so that way, there's no rumor mill talk going on in
Yeah.
here. I heard it from the man himself. Okay. I'm going to kind of put two of these into one, because I think they're very important. Physical training and the fact that you put placing yourself in difficult situations to prepare for life and work challenges. So I in my upbringing, especially since I've started attending conferences, physical fitness and firefighting go hand in hand. You add on top of that these programs such as smoke divers, you got Basil's OBT. Firefighting is hard. And if you can understand that and then start pushing yourself, even if it's a rep, one rep extra per day to get better, to form that mindset, like, embrace the suck. Things are tough. Nothing's easy. How has that played a role in your mindset? Because you are a very active physical fitness firefighter. And I saw a post that said, something to the equivalent that with firefighting, it's not really about like age, but it's more about your fitness. But I think the older you get, the harder it becomes because, your body gets older, things start hurting more. But how important is that physical fitness portion?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. It's everything to protect yourself. It's everything for you to for your ability to protect others. I mean, and fitness really isn't just the physicality of the your ability to do the job. It's what you put into your body. It's your food, your hydration, your sleep or lack of sleep, your stress levels. There's all those little hacks that you can try to do. It's whatever works for you. Whatever fitness program works for you. I'm a little biased to the CrossFit space. I truly think that firefighters need to be doing some sort of strength and conditioning work. I think that's a great program. I've been doing it for almost a decade now, and I've definitely had some really good results out of that. And not only be able to perform on the fire ground, but being able to perform raising three kids, I would say people, reach out to me often, ask me, the workout questions, like, what do you do for a workout? Or, hey, I'm about to sign up for Basil's class. What did you do prepare for that class, or what should I do? And I always steer them to, you need to be doing strength and conditioning, 3 or 4 or 5 times a week. And then if you're doing a job specific training session, definitely sprinkle in some gear workouts. I'm more of a fan of, if I'm in gear doing what we call an air consumption, I'm probably more likely doing fire ground skills. I will do some fitness there too, or blend the two, but I'm more like, I like forcing the door. Searching the bay floor, throwing ladders, things like that. If I'm in gear, and then when I'm in gym clothes, that's when I'm doing more of my my traditional workouts there. But yeah, it's everything. It's a confidence booster too. You know, if I can come to a challenge and see a challenge that I know I'm physically capable of doing it, it gives you the confidence to be able to perform that, and it's safer. You know, being good at your job is safer. Being physically fit for the job is safer. You know, an example of that would be like a deadlift. If you perform a deadlift properly in training, and you work up to a heavy deadlift, obviously a lot of the work we do, it requires a lower back strength, picking somebody off the ground, picking tools up off the ground, carrying weight on your back. And so if I'm, in the gym doing a deadlift, training that specific movement, that translates great into the job, and being able to protect my body when I'm wearing 100 pounds of gear and I'm trying to drag somebody out of a burning building. It rather than sitting on the recliner saying, "Oh, you're just going to wear yourself out for when this next call comes," and you're being a couch potato and having addiction to soda and carbohydrates. You know, you're not going to be physically prepared to do the job as much as I would be. So yeah, I think it's everything. Even outside the fire service, it's great for your family, because you're being a great example for your kids and your wife of lifestyle, to live a healthy lifestyle. It's an outlet for anyone that's having any negative thoughts or anything like that. It's a very good outlet to get those kind of burn off some steam. Yeah, so I obviously I enjoy it and think it's very beneficial.
Okay. And with you promoting to battalion chief, right, I'm trying to figure out the good way to say this. You know, with being a battalion chief, you have some that are like, all right, I've arrived at this position. I worked hard, I got here. But then as time goes on, their sets and reps decline because of their position. How do you try to balance that, where? Because I know it's got to be hard for me coming off the truck, but it's also a necessary evil. Because, like you stated earlier, as you promote up, you can affect more change in a sense. You know, you got more skin in the game. So, how do you try to find that balance?
Yeah, so inevitably, the higher up you go, the more non-fireman job you're gonna have, right?
Right,
So
right.
there is times where I have to be in the office for hours at a time doing scheduling, payroll, sending emails. We're the filter between administration and operations, so I'm constantly in meetings. I have a lot of extra duties, collateral duties within the fire department that I'm responsible for, that takes up a lot of my time. But what I do with every promotion is, when I go for a promotion, my mindset is I'm getting promoted to do more, not do less. And people have to realize that a lot of the fire service that has negative culture and negative people in leadership positions, these people have gotten promoted because they want to do less. And I never wanted to be that way. I'm getting promoted to do more, to have more responsibility, to have more impact, to be more about we instead of me. And so that was one thing I always have in my back of my mind is, hey, I took on this job to do more. And I also took on this job. You have to change as you promote. There's things that, yes, you're going to have to do some changing. However, one of the things that was non-negotiable for me was I want to stay active in that role, meaning I'm going to go out there and train with the guys in gear. I'm going to stay working out. I'm going to work out in gear with these guys. And for us, we do a kind of a mid-afternoon is our normal workout time on duty. And I make sure that pretty much every shift that I'm out there with those guys. And again, I'm doing it because I want to show them that I'm still engaged. I also want to, if I have a 20-year-old that we just hired and he's a probie, and here I am, 18-year battalion chief, and I'm doing a gear workout, that's going to show that, man, I need to be out here too, right? I need to, and there's some competitiveness, obviously, between us. We're all competitive. So, everyone jokes, hey, hey, new guy, make sure the battalion doesn't beat you in this workout. But that's the thing is, have the mindset of doing more as you promote, and staying engaged with the guys that are still running the calls and doing being in gear and stuff. So I try not to, I don't want to be too far removed from that. But the guys do have to realize that obviously there is some things that have to get taken care of because that's my new position.
No, I totally understand that. But like you mentioned, there are some that think with moving up through the ranks means you can do less and like, well, that's not my job anymore. But and I always kind of like to say the fire department, we live in a what if world. So my example would be, well, what if you are just driving through and you notice a little smoke and you pull up and you're first due by yourself. Structure fire, and you have a citizen saying, "Hey, someone's in there." Like, is your battalion buggy set up right? Are you prepared? You know what I mean? So, like, to me, that's very important. So, I love your answer on that.
Yeah, no, and I do that. Drive around every shift. I go. I think about that. I think about it all the time. That, hey, if I roll up by myself, how am I going to get dressed quickly? How am I going to react? And again, going back to the training gear and all that. Like, I know I'm physically capable of doing that. My mindset's right because I'm constantly thinking about that. Back to my training where I put myself in difficult situations, whether it be a physical challenge, a competition that I signed up for, or mentally, I'm just constantly challenging myself. It's for when something life or work is throwing at me like that. I'm going to, buy lunch, and then bam, I drive through a neighborhood and there's a house on fire and somebody's standing outside crying that their family's in there. Like, I've had that scenario in my head hundreds of times. And so if that ever happens to me when I'm in that chief buggy, I'm going to be less reactive and more proactive because I've already prepped my mindset and my body to be able to handle that stress. It's going to be hard. It might be one of the most difficult situations I've ever been in. But I think I'm going to be, I would almost bet I'd be more prepared than someone who's sitting on the recliner or someone who's getting promoted to do less, where if that happens to them, that's going to be pure chaos in their mind.
Yeah. And I like that you said that because it just solidifies the fact that I'm not crazy. 'Cause like I'll sit in the back of a truck if I'm not driving for the day and I'll think about, all right, like I'll look at homes we'll pass by and things are going through my head of this scenario and that scenario. And then I kind of ask myself, which I want to have this little conversation because I think it's important, but like I'll ask myself, is this all I have from, is my life just this? Is there something wrong with me, or is it just I'm trying to be the best version of myself? Because like I'll have conversations with myself, and it's just like, you always hear, don't let this job just be, don't let the job just be all you know. And it's like, well, am I in that category? Because that's how I think.
No, you're definitely not alone. There's a lot of people. We call it burning down houses. So we're driving around burning down houses, and that's what we're doing. We're just doing mindset drills. And man, yeah, you're not alone. You're not crazy. And honestly, I'd say if you're on duty, man, no, it is your responsibility to be into the job. I can at least, if I'm paying you for 24 hours, whatever, I need you to be engaged. I need you to be thinking about training. And if you're in a leadership role, how you're going to get these guys in and out of a building safely and extinguish fire and search for victims. And I need you all in on that. And, obviously I can't control when you go home. I'd like to say that I, still like people somewhat engaged to the job because the benefit it's done for me. Like my mindset with a job is it's been a positive thing. There's maybe some negative things with my family early on when I was younger, but I definitely got slapped around with that and turned my life around as far as my relationship with my wife and all that. But yeah, it's all good stuff. And honestly, man, it makes me a much calmer commander and company officer when I was a company officer because again, I may have not have gone to 10,000 fires, but I swear I've had 10,000 fires in my head looking at buildings in my city. And so, and it's really weird if this has ever happened to you, you do that burning the building down where you guys are driving around burning buildings down in your head, and that exact building eventually in the future catches on fire. That, if
I've
you've
never
ever
had
had that
that.
happen, that
No.
is a weird thing. And
Okay.
that's happened to me quite a few times, but yeah, it makes me very calm on the radio. I feel like the decisions, things just kind of slow down because I've been there. I've I mentally have been there so many times that in all the scenarios I could think of that were the what ifs that you talked about, I've just drilled that in my head so much that it definitely makes it easier on me for sure.
Okay. All right. search and suppression done simultaneously, and why it is optimal.
Yeah, that is a man, I can't. That is no truer statement. I'm glad the American Fire Service this past year has really bitten off on a, basically somewhat of that term, and I give kudos to UL in our search and rescue survey that we, or excuse me, search and rescue experiments that we just did. It was 2020 when we started those, but they talk a lot in the report about how important search and suppression done simultaneously. And when I go around, I do a lecture on search, and in our CAN conference class, we talk about this a lot. And again, it's the system that I grew up in the fire service, and that is truck and does truck work, engine does engine work, truck searches in front of the hose line. Remember, I'm a 9 square mile city, three firehouses. It doesn't matter if I'm in my first due or what would be technically my third due. There's more times than not we're able to get in front of that first due hose line. So we have dedicated companies that will do a search and do extinguishment, and the benefit of that is very optimal, and it shows it in the science and the data, and it's shown us in street smart, so our street experience. You can read the report and why that's important. I can give you an example from my own agency, 9 square mile city. I think it was last month in December. We had a working apartment fire in a 2-story apartment complex. No reports of any victims or anything like that. The guy showed up, engine pulled a line up to the second floor apartment. Truck four was in front of them. They forced the door. They started their search. They found a woman, pulled her out, was able to do ALS treatment. And we obviously transport too, so we were able to put her in the ambulance. The hospital is 3 miles from that building, and we're able to transport her right away, and it was a successful outcome. And the engine, the whole time that was happening, they were focused on going to the fire and putting the fire out. And there's stories like that across this country daily. And it's like you're saying, that playbook. It's these guys go in, they know exactly what to do. They don't have to be told what to do as a new commanding officer. That makes it my life a lot easier, because basically I'm just listening to what's happening on the fire ground. I'm not having to give out as many orders as somebody in a different system. And I just see it time and time again. And again, we've developed classes about it. Our CAN class, where you're going to go in front of the hose line, you're going to isolate that room, you're going to call the engine where the fire is at, they're going to come in, put the fire out, and you're going to continue on with your search. And yeah, it's just a very successful system for sure. You definitely don't want to. An idea, and the opposite of that would be showing up on a rig, waiting to get an assignment, and then, all right, well, usually departments are going to prioritize extinguishment if this is their system, right? So then they're going to go in and they either say, okay, you knock back the fire, start your search now, or search with a hose line in your hand, and that's not optimal at all. And again, you can go to firefighterrescuesurvey.com and you can look at these data points on I think what a th 3 or 4,000 inputs right now, and you can look, and search and suppression is the highest survivability of our victims. Again, to kind of dive a little deeper in that, I can give you an example of two companies, a truck and an engine. And again, this could be two engines, but for my system, it's going to be a truck and an engine. Our truck is going to our truck will break up into two on the inside team, two on the outside team. That's a four-man truck. The inside team's going to start their search typically from the front door, and they're going to search all the egress points, the common rooms, and the bedrooms. Basically, they're in charge of the entire interior space. The outside truck is going to start their search from outside, usually through a window, and they're going to target those bedrooms. All right, so we got our bedrooms. We got basically the whole house covered with the inside team. The engine company, they're going to come in. They're going to be stretching a line. Where do we stretch lines? Through major egress points. So that's hallways, front door, usually hallways into the fire room. And so while our guys on a hose line might not physically be searching for a human because we have dedicated company doing that, they are occupying space. We had a fire many years ago where the engine company found somebody because they just happened to be occupying the egress path, and that's where the person was. And so with two companies, we're able to flood that building with as many searching firefighters as possible for our case. And then we still have obviously more resources showing up. So it's a very good system. I'm very proud of that. That's another reason that people it brings it's a another recruiting tool for us, is because we have a big city culture or of tactics in a little city package. So a lot of people they yearn for that. They want that. They want to be treated like a family, but yet still have tactics like a big city.
Okay. And only if you want to answer this. I am a firm believer with all the research and everything, like, yes, suppression, search, done at the same time. And allowing that truck company to do their job, meaning, they don't necessarily need a hose line in place because if there's a line already there, the engine company is doing that they're supposed to do, like it should go good. But there are chiefs out there who are very hesitant on that. They don't like that tactic. And, I've said this to plenty of other chiefs that I've been fortunate to interview. No fire chief wants a line of duty death. But I think that holding back the reins and hindering departments from evolving to that type of culture, you're kind of setting yourself up for, some bad results there.
Yeah, not only bad results, but the public, if you haven't noticed lately, is starting to hold fire departments accountable. They're starting to hold fire departments accountable. Insurance companies and lawyers are getting smart, and they're holding fire departments accountable for lack of with inactions or anything like that, right? Or doing something wrong. And in fact, kind of, I think it's a positive, but some of the negative things, depending on your mindset, might be the fact that if we're putting out this UL research and we're putting out firefighter rescue survey research, we're telling the public the gold standard of how to operate as a fire department. And if you don't operate that, it's a quick Google search and you can find all this information that this 400-page document by a accredited agency is telling us that search and suppression done simultaneously is optimal for your victims. Why did you not do that? And so obviously I'm on that camp, so I'm proud that that's out there because I could always fall back to that. If my culture at my fire environment started to change, I could say, hey guys, look, if we want to be not held accountable for lack of something that we're lacking skill wise or tactics wise or something went wrong that it shouldn't have gone wrong, it's out there, and we really need to stay at a high level there. The other thing is these chief officers, it's y'all's responsibility. You guys need to be training your people. You need a highly educated, highly trained firefighting force, and your comfort sitting in a buggy commanding a fire, or if you're an admin chief and you're at home, eating dinner with your family at the night, you know that you've done everything possible to train and educate your people that are going to be doing crawling the hallways, that it's going to make you feel a lot more at ease. And I spent so much time with our guys training them up, getting them prepared, and now that they're training the next group of waves of firefighters coming on, when we get a call, I'm gonna feel more at ease because I just put in so much time and effort, years of time with these guys, with each other, that I know their ability, they know my ability, I know where they're lacking, they know where I'm lacking, and everything just kind of flows a little bit more. So I'm gonna be more opted to letting the reins out if I see something that is challenging and I go, nope, we've been there mentally because we've done those burn down scenarios. We've definitely put in the hours training, and I'm gonna feel more at ease to allow them to go in and do their job. But it's all preparation. You have to prep these guys and put in time with them.
Well said. Well said. All right. Raising kids to be warriors. I find that very important. You mentioned you have three children. God bless you, because I only have one. We're only having one. I can't imagine multiple in this day and age. But in a sense, me and my wife, we balance each other out. Like, my wife teaches my daughter things, and I like to teach her some like what I call real world things and how the world actually works. But with firefighting, firefighting and raising kids kind of go hand in hand, two different topics. But the way you want your probie or your membership or your organization to respond is the same way you want your kids to, hopefully, when they go out in the world, you have prepared them for success. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's everything to me. I mean, my wife and I are definitely on the same page as far as how we want to raise our kids. And again, it starts with you. It starts with you as the parent, whether it be me or my wife, and how we represent ourselves out in public or in the home. Being that example, whether you're working out, the kids, like, to them, it's like, for mommy and daddy to work out in the garage gym, it's like brushing their teeth. Like, they just, that's what they see, that's what they do. I try to get my kids outside as much as possible. We're blessed to live in Florida, so we can basically be outside year round, letting them be kids, letting them, go ride their bikes, letting them swim in the canal here, we go out on the boat all the time, just being involved with it. Basically, I try to keep them outside, being kids, being away from the screen as much as I can, and eating good foods, like keeping away from soda and fast foods and all that stuff. And you're just raising them to be little warriors that way. And it's so hard, man. It is, no matter the challenges I've put myself through events or the job, it still comes back to me. Raising three kids specifically has been the most challenging thing in my life. I could see where parents could easily, like, right now my wife's working, I'm home alone, I'm in about an hour or so, I'm gonna have three kids home from school, they're gonna be hungry. I could easily take them up to a McDonald's, grab some food, just give it to them and be done. But that's not how we want to raise our kids. So I'm gonna have to cook. One's gonna be going to the bathroom. One's gonna be, the other two are gonna be fighting. One wants to be outside, and it's just pure chaos. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life to manage that. I definitely don't want to judge other parents for doing those things, like taking a phone and saying, "Here, go in on the couch and veg out for a little while, so I can, cook." Not that, hey, I stick my kids in front of the TVs too when I'm at the last end's wit, but we try so hard not to do that. And any parent listening to this, you guys know I have full respect for any parent. It's extremely difficult to raise kids. It's extremely difficult to raise kids in this job. It's another layer of that is that I'm gone a lot. I travel a lot for the teaching business, and I'm gone for a week at a time, multiple trips in a month, and it's just hard on the whole family. So when I'm home, I raise my kids the way I want to. We want to be outside. We want to do activity things. We want to eat right. We want to work out with them and show them to be kind to people. All those things. So it takes a lot of work for sure. You mentioned, when you were talking about riding around thinking that you were too into the job and maybe, not focused on the right things. It's like, for me, when I'm home, obviously I've run a business that's related to the fire service. So when I'm home, I do have to dabble in the fire service a little bit. I'm on social media a lot. I do that because I want to stay engaged with what's going on. It's the way I'm staying engaged with the community. I do try my hardest to, when I'm home with my family. A big thing, people ask me advice for that sometimes, is I uprooted my family and we moved an hour away from the fire department. I live on the coast. I'm an hour away. I'm less likely to show up to an event or get called in for overtime because it's not 10 minutes down the road anymore. It's an hour drive. And so that was very purposeful to bring my family, one, to live at the coast and be more of the lifestyle we like, hang out at the beach and on water and stuff, but also to help me disconnect. It's pretty cool because I have an hour drive to and from work. So when I drive home from work, I'll listen to music. I'll listen to a podcast that's not related to the fire service at all, and it gives me an hour to decompress. And so when I walk into the house, and my wife hands me three kids, and she's off to work, and I'm now I have to be a dad. I didn't just have a 5-10 minute drive and have to snap right there. And the opposite, going into work. You know what? Tomorrow I go in on shift. I'm probably going to listen to a firefighter podcast or something like that, or something to do with the fire service. And that way I ramp up and I start to get the mindset going. Like, okay, what are we going to do today for training, and what do we have on the schedule? And so I start to ramp up for work that way. So, but yeah, it's I respect all your parents, and whether you have one or 10, or in my case, three, it's tough.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And I agree with your statement of living outside of work. Like, I moved out. I live two counties away, and I did that for a reason. I don't mind the commute. I actually like the commute because it allows me that time, like you said, to decompress. But another thing too, it allows me where I don't have to see the individuals that we have to interact with, you know, at the grocery store. Kind of weird. Like, hey, I just pumped on your chest a couple of days ago. Like that, you know, I don't have to do that.
Yeah,
So
that's a good point.
I like that. I like
Yeah,
that.
I love my city too. I would love to. I wouldn't mind living. It's an awesome city. A little too far from the beach from me, but and the same reason for you to disconnect and not run
Yeah.
into people that you're running
Yeah.
to.
For sure, for sure. Last question for you. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up in the fire service?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of already reached my goal, my minimal goal, I guess. If I said I had a goal in the fire service, and that was a company officer rank. I really always saw myself as a company officer. I was kind of bummed, I'm just shy of 20 years on the job. I got 18, so I'm a little shy, a little bummed. I really had a goal. It was like I wanted to be a company officer on that truck for that 20-year mark, and then got moved up to battalion if that's what I so desired. And but again, it's opportunities come up in my fire department sometimes out of the blue, and something like that happened this year, where in 2024, where I was able to land the battalion's position. We only have three battalions in the department, so one for each shift. So I definitely felt like I was ready for that. So right now I'm enjoying that. A lot of people ask me, I didn't, so many people when I said I got promoted were like, I never saw you coming off the truck. People gotta realize I did 18 years on the same vehicle, basically. 17 years, because I did about a year on an engine. I rode tailboard. I was a tillerman. I was an engineer on it, and then a lieutenant on it. And so I was kind of ready for some change. Again, to go a little higher up in the job, I was able to have my fingers a little bit more on the pulse and do those things, and have be an example for a broader bunch instead of a company level. Now it's a shift level that I'm influencing, which I've been very, very happy to do. I'm having a lot of fun. I've been telling people, they ask me, how's it going? It's been almost 6 months, and I said, I don't know if it's still the honeymoon phase or if I'm just like, this has kind of been my destiny, but I've really been enjoying it. Seriously, it's been a very good, been fun. It's been challenging in different ways, and I'm enjoying it. So my end goal, if again, I would be satisfied if I left tomorrow. I'd be satisfied with where I've ended up and what I've done in my job and in the fire service. I definitely feel fulfilled. However, my probably ultimate job that I would want to do the fire department is the training chief position. Again, that touches everybody in the fire department, right? You from the brand new the new hire class to the fire chief. I like literally you. That position, I would argue, has the most influence of the entire fire department than say even the fire chief, because the fire chief is, in some agencies, is fairly disconnected from operations, and not saying that's a negative thing. That's not his job anymore. He's really focused on the relationship between his department and the city, in our case. And so the training position, you were doing that. At least in my system, you're part of administration, so you're really in with like capital improvement and policy development, as well as training your people and mentoring your people. So I could definitely see myself doing that if that position became available between now and me leaving. But yeah, outside that, man, I'm looking to enjoy retirement. Again, I'm beyond my back half. I definitely see myself, probably fully disconnecting out of the fire service, meaning job wise. I'm not one of these guys that's at least planning on leaving and then gonna go get another fire job to draw another pension. I'm trying to set myself up to where when I leave, I can focus on my kids as they're getting older and my wife, and we like to travel and do those things. So I would like to be able to set myself up for those things, you know.
Yeah, no, well said. Awesome. All right. Well, Chief, I appreciate your time. Appreciate you accepting this invite, coming on. That way the listeners get to know a little bit more about you. Don't ever change. Continue doing what you're doing. Obviously, because it's you're doing something very positive for the fire service. So I just want to say thank you for accepting the invite, coming on.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate it, Danny.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.